Let me bang.
I do let you bang.
Let me bang you, Jamie, man.
Let you bang.
Let you bang.
Let you bang.
Greetings, nerds and virgins.
Go for Jesus. No, for gay Jesus, people.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for your favorite mixed martial arts podcast. Recording out of Los Angeles, California, it's MMA Roasted with Adam Hunter.
Who the fuck is that guy?
What's up, people? Welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter, here with one of my best friends, Sean McCorkle. Everyone like your story, by the way. We got a 99.
Oh, one guy.
One guy got mad. Everyone else, though, was like 99% of Rotten Tomatoes, by the way. People were laughing their asses off. I got a lot of personal DMs. So how are you feeling?
Doing all right, man. I don't know. I went to my first physical therapy session yesterday, and it was funny trying to explain my whole story, my back. We didn't even get to any physical therapy. Like, I just had to, like, explain everything with my back and my shoulder. And by that time, our 45 minutes was up. The guy was like, well, maybe next week we'll have to get to that, because they don't want to start anything until they understand what they're doing or what you're hoping to accomplish. And I just kept telling, less pain. Like, that's my only goal, is to hurt less. So seemed like a nice kid. It always sucks when your physical therapist is 23 or 24, because you're like, how much can this kid know? You know,
but sometimes it's better. Sometimes that's those are people that actually still care about their jobs when they're young.
No, really. That's what it seemed like. It was the last time I went to physical therapy years ago, they had me bouncing on a ball first thing, like sitting on a ball and bouncing on it. And I was like, dude, this is compressing my spine and shooting pain. I can't feel my left foot when I do this. Well, let's just give it a 20-minute try. And I was like, nah, we're not doing it for 20 minutes. And then, like, walk on this treadmill. Step, I can't feel my leg. Like, it hurts. Like, they just kept thinking I was being a baby. And the guy started out with, do you think you do 60 push-ups? I was like, if you've got a time machine, I could do 60 push-ups. Like, you know, like 5 years ago, but I can't. Not straight, not right now, you know what I mean? But yeah, it was so none of that. But yeah, he actually, he does seem to actually believe I'm hurting, which is nice. So
when I went to physical therapy for my torn ACL, it was a bunch of kids, like high school kids and me. And I was like the annoying old creepy guy that was like, oh, so you guys have girlfriends? And like a couple of them were dating. And like, I was like, so when did you guys start dating? Like, I just became that annoying, like, who is this guy? You know, that I think that's the problem, man. If I don't do comedy during the day or at night, I think I had a couple times off. It comes out during the day on people who don't want comedy or know they're getting comedy.
Right.
So it's like the guy at the bank or the DMV. And then people just look at me like I'm an asshole. By the way, so right now I live in LA. There's an actor strike, obviously, and everyone's posting, you know, all these pictures of them on the strike, but I really wasn't working that much when there was no strike, you know? So I'm thinking about just showing up to protest to make connections. Like
that's a good idea. Yeah.
Like that's the only reason I'm going to go, is to network and be like, hey, you know, give out my business cards and stuff. But I'm like, that's completely the wrong reason. Like, but because I see people posting a picture of them, you know, supporting the strike. And I'm like, they're just doing it so that they could just for likes. I mean, not all of them. People are actually, you know, not all of them, but a lot of them, like
the same people that posted they got their COVID shot and they're real happy about it. And now they're having heart attacks during youth basketball games.
Well, that's a little extreme, but yeah, 100%. So I was going to tell a story, by the way, of you ever like do something ridiculously awful, but then people stick with you and you're like, what's your problem?
Wait, what? You lost me. But you did something awful and they did what?
So when I was 21 years old, I had a girlfriend. We were like on and off, and we went on like a break. Back in the day, that was a thing back in the day. People go on breaks. Which is it's like, hey, I'm just, I want to fuck other people for a couple months and then come back.
Right.
You know, like, I don't even know this is a thing. But then my girlfriend at the time was like, let's go on a break. So we go on a break.
Right.
And at the time I was giving out flyers in New York City. I mean, I did this for 5 years, every day in Times Square. It was the most degrading job. Hey, comedy show at Hamburger Harry's. We got comics from MTV and Conan O'Brien. And it was us. It was me and Dave. Right. Me and Dave Rubin ran the show. Dave, who's now like a big Republican, conservative, gay guy, right? So yeah. So we would trick people, and then Melissa Rauch, who's on The Big Bang Theory. Melissa, who's now on, she was on Night Court. She's the judge on Night Court. She was my walker. So I would stop people. Hey, comedy show, we got the best comics ever. People would be like looking up. So I knew as soon as they looked up, because they were in Times Square, I'm like, I got them, because they have nothing to do. And then I would be like, hey, the show is down this alley, which looks sketchy as fuck, in a place called Harry's. And then I have Melissa, who was this little girl, would walk them over. She was my walker, right? So then, and then they would get into the comedy club in the back of a hamburger restaurant, and they would sit there, and then it'd be the same comics that gave them the flyer. So they were just pissed. Right. Because we told them there were all these great comics, and like, hey, that's an asshole who gave me the flyer. Anyway, but the one good thing about this job is I would get laid left and right, because you get all these girls that were, tourists that coming into New York for the first time, and like on their bucket list was like bang a guy from New York, basically. So
yeah, high ambitions,
very high ambitions. So there was a girl that I met, and we went back to my place, and we had sex, and like the condom broke. So I just ripped it off. I'm like, rather than put on another condom, which I should have done, I just was like, ah, fuck this. Of course, I think I busted in her, because back then I didn't think I can get anyone pregnant. And, so then me and my girlfriend, like a month later, decided to go to end our like break. So we get back together. And this girl that I hooked up with was from Missouri. She was a stripper, a hot blonde stripper. I was like, she was planning on coming to visit me. So I call her up and I'm like, hey, listen, you can't come and visit. And I don't want to say at the time I got back with my girlfriend, in case that didn't last. But I'm like, I booked the part on a soap opera and this and that. You sorry you can't come. And she's like, oh, because I'm pregnant and you're the father. So,
so you're like, so we're going on Maury Povich. I got to cancel my other TV appearance. Okay.
So I flew her. So I flew her to New York. And we went to get the abortion, right? And at the time, I'm back with my girlfriend, so I had to tell her what was going on. And I thought she was going to dump me immediately. So when the girl stayed, I think she gave me head, and I guess, that is cheating. But I thought she was going to dump me anyway. And of course, my girlfriend sticks with me. We go, and at the time, an abortion procedure was like a seven-hour procedure in Planned Parenthood. And you're walking past protesters. And so I was there for like 7 hours. And there were a lot of women there. And they were looking at me like I was a good boyfriend, because at least I was with the girl. These girls were there by themselves, So I think I went and saw a movie or something, because it was like 7 hours.
Always respectful having an accomplice to your murder, but it's always less offensive.
So then we took care of that, and she was very nice about it, very cool about it, and then I got back with my girlfriend, and she stayed with me, and that's when I started to question her judgment. Because I'm like, that's when you're like, wait a minute. Did you ever have that situation? Not that one, but where someone sticks with you, you're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, no, actually, she'll probably get mad if she hears it, but my current girlfriend, fiance / wife, whatever you want, I was telling her one day she was the worst decision maker I've ever seen in an argument. And I thought, well, that explains why she's with me. You know what I mean? I really did think that maybe I shouldn't encourage that line of thought anymore, like her to rethink her life decisions, because she for sure wouldn't be with me if she was making good decisions. So I've thought that before, man. Like when I used to have a business, at some point I had a truck driver who's my cousin. He's dead now, rest in peace. But he pooped in the semi while driving 70 miles down the highway. He just leaned his butt over, pulled his pants down, pooped on a piece of cardboard because he had diarrhea. And we had a load that was running late. And so we had a load running early, apparently. But so he takes a dump there. He gets back and he talked just like Brendan Schaub. He was like, hey, man, listen, somebody's got to clean up that shit like in the truck. I don't have time. I got to go to a doctor's appointment. So you're just going to have one of your Mexican guys clean that up. I was like, dude, no one's cleaning that up. You're going out and cleaning that up. Yeah, what are you talking about? And so he was like, I need somebody to help me. Like, I don't know why he needed help. So my warehouse manager at the time, I called him Ron Dew, even though he was white. His name was Ron. I was like, Ron Dew, been friends since we were kids. I was like, would you go out and help Jeff with whatever he needs help with? I didn't tell Ron Dew what he needed help with. Ron Dew's like, man, I can't. I just pooped my pants. like that or whatever. Like he just pooped his pants at work too. My warehouse manager, like within 15 minutes,
their pants. One guy shits in the truck.
Yeah, and within 15 minutes of each other, my two of my most important guys pooped their pants, and it was a moment of clarity for me because I thought, who's the idiot? The idiot's pooping their pants at work, or the idiot that hired and put in position two important positions, two guys who pooped their pants within 15 minutes of each other at work. And I was like, at that point, there were like 60 employees. I was like, dude, those are two of my best guys, and they both shit their pants. Like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing with this?
I know you guys are thinking, Adam, how do you have so much energy? You just go, 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 go. I'll tell you, our next partner is AG1, which is the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. I drink it literally every day. Now, I gave AG1 a try because I was feeling run down. I'm like, ugh, can't do this with the kid and the wife and the career and just nonstop, go, go, go. But I'm telling you, I am feeling so great. I got a boost in energy. I feel better. My support system in my body, it tastes great and I feel great. And I drink AG1 in the morning before working out, doing my fight camp. And it makes me feel unstoppable, ready to take on the whole day. Come on, day. Bring it, people. Okay. So I support this. I'm all for it. Okay. A lot of our athletes drink AG1. Okay. And because I know it's important for these fighters to take care of their bodies, not including Kelvin Gastelum. I'm kidding. Kelvin does it too. So if a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplement routine, try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5. That's right. 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/MMA roasted. That's drinkag1.com/MMA roasted. Check it out.
Like, we need to get better human resources going or something, man. Or I don't know, some kind of Pepto-Bismol on tap or something, man. Because people were, yeah, it was something else, man. That was crazy. That was both at the same time shit their pants and both needed help cleaning it up. So
the easiest way to rationalize that is when they're family members, because you can't get rid of them.
Right.
There are so many people.
Yeah. One was my cousin, so I guess you could rationalize that. The other guy was like family to me. But I realized when I said one time to my brother, we were partners, I said, we have 130 of the dumbest people I've ever met in my life working for us. And we hired them, so we must be like at the top of the list, me and you. Like, we're the ones that actually gave them jobs and pay them every week, you know?
There are so many times I talked to customer service or something, and I'm like, who didn't they hire? Like who did they,
right?
I did a show in Texas last week, and I got one of those miles. Those airline miles are the worst. Like, it's the best because you save $150 or something, but right. They routed me from Texas, right? From Dallas to Michigan to LA.
Right.
Which makes sense. So I'm always like, okay, I'll get there and I'll get him to change it. Like, hey, anyway, I can get in early and I'll get a nice person, right? So I call up the night before, listen, because of course I'm getting in at 11 o'clock at night. I haven't seen my kid, I've seen my kid 4 days in the past 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Anyway, sorry, the ticket that you have, you can't change it because it's an unchangeable ticket. I'm like, I know, but do you have kids? I'm trying everything. She's like, well, maybe if you go to the plant, to the airport, maybe the guy will do it, right? So I go to the airport.
They always pass it off to the next guy. Maybe the next guy will help you get you an exit row. Like, sure.
So I go to the airport and I'm like, hey, listen, you guys got me going from, Dallas to Michigan, the other way to get to LA. I got a middle seat. Is there any way that you could get me in earlier? I see there's like 87 flights that would be quicker, right? And the guy's like, oh, well, you have an ticket. Can I speak to your supervisor? So this guy runs over and he's like, my man. As soon as he says my man, I know I'm fucked,
Right.
He's like, my man, here's the problem. If I did this for you, we would lose $1,000. I would, because someone could buy this ticket for $1,000. I would fire anyone that did this for me. Anyone did this for you, I would fire. I'm like, well, maybe you could be a nice guy and wouldn't fire that person. And aren't you the person now? He's like, listen, my man, you're not listening. And then the guy goes, let me pull up your thing. He goes, man, you have a 4-page thing of you trying to get in earlier. Man, you're going to get banned from Delta, just like that rabbi. Like,
what?
Yeah.
Brought a rabbi into it?
Yeah. So now the Jews are being blamed. Like,
right. So well, now, as a par for the course.
So now I'm like, yeah, but you could just be a nice guy. No, listen, I know that you think you could go here and say, you could be a nice guy, but that's not how we do it. I used to be a manager. I would fire anybody. Dude, the guy, and I'm like, you know, you have a little bit of power, and this is how you use it, right? And then it was just like, oh, God. So that put me in a fucking mood, you know?
I had a very similar story, except they called the cops on me. I was flying a lot at a time when my fiance was living in San Diego and I was in Indianapolis, so I was flying all the time out there to see her and vice versa. So I go to the airline one time, and I'm 5 minutes late, like, getting there. Yeah. And they're like, oh, you missed your flight. You're 5 minutes late. And I was like, well, I'm not checking a bag or anything. Can I just go ahead and still try to make it? They're like, nope, got to reschedule. And if I want a guaranteed ticket, they want to charge me $200. You know what I mean? For a guaranteed spot on the next flight. And I'm like, well, they used to be like, you can fly standby, wait till tomorrow, or pay $200. We'll guarantee a seat. And I was like, okay, cool. So I paid the $200, didn't say anything. The next weekend, I come up there and, oh, yeah, we're sorry, sir. We overbooked this flight, so you're going to have to take the next one. I said, okay, so you're going to pay me $200 if you want me to take that next one. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? And I said, last week, you guys charged me $200 for being 5 minutes late. I'm early this week. You're telling me there's some kind of problem, and it's not the weather. There's some kind of overbooking problem, so you're going to pay me $200. And I said, oh, I want it back. And he was like, I said, does that stand to reason? He's like, are you threatening me? He starts with that shit. And I was like, dude, what are you, this little twerpy dude? So what are you talking about? So I was threatening you. I tell you, I slapped the shit out of you, you know? Yeah. So he calls the cops, like immediately calls the cops. And they, you know, TSA and cops are all too excited to come try to attack me, you know? So they come up like, what's the problem? And I said, this guy started talking shit. And I just said, I was going to, you know, if I want to threaten him, I tell him to smack him. I didn't do anything. And then they're like telling me, sir, turn around, put your hands behind your back. I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? You're going to arrest me? Because they take it serious because I told them they were stupid too, you know, whatever, TSA. Yeah. So then another cop comes up and he's like the manager. He goes, wait a minute. What airline? I said, like Delta or American or whatever. Is it Kevin? And I was like, I don't know. And he goes over. He goes, let him go. He said, dude, he just go. He goes, talk to the manager. He said, Kevin's at it again. Like tells the manager, Kevin's calling the police on everybody. Like every time someone disagrees with him, they call the police. I tell that story on my Facebook. Some guy hits me up and said, hey, don't worry, bro. I got you. I got your back, like some dude. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but it's really okay, man. Like, you don't have to, no, I got you. And I was like, dude, it really don't do anything because it always comes back on me when friends are getting revenge for me, you know? So next thing I know, this guy sends me a video a couple of days later. He goes to the airport. He's talking to Kevin, filming him without Kevin knowing. And he starts saying, are you threatening me to the guy Kevin or whatever? He goes, wait, are you threatening me? Did you just grab my cock? Like this and that, like saying stuff like that. And all of a sudden he says, I want to talk to a manager right now. And Kevin's like, sir, I don't know what. And he's like, give me a manager now. Police starts yelling or whatever. Like this guy gets Kevin in trouble and sends me the video or whatever. Like, I got him back, man. Don't worry. I was just like, dude, it's okay. Like, I liked it. But at the same time, I don't want the cops showing up at my house saying he swatted somebody or whatever. But it's
like the guy in Happy Gilmore. It's like Shooter McGavin's friend. Remember in Happy Gilmore?
Run people over. Sizzler. That guy was famous. He was a famous comedian back in the 70s, the guy that played that role. Wasn't he on the guy that played Shooter's friend. He was on like, what was that show? It was like Saturday Night Live, but before.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that. That guy was hilarious.
Yeah, no, he's a famous, oh my gosh, that show, SCTV. You remember that?
Oh, was it, what's his name? It wasn't, what's his name? The guy that was always in trouble. Like, he ended up like, not in real life, but he was ended up on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he was he
died. Let me look it up real quick, but yeah, Shooter's friend, that was a famous comedian in the 70s, unless I'm crazy.
Oh, wow.
But that SCTV, I guess, was like a Canadian Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, no, it had a lot of really funny people. A lot of really funny people on SCTV. So I did a show in Vegas, and this guy, Justin James, came. Really nice guy. So last time his last fight in the UFC, he bet his whole purse on himself, right?
Right.
This is back.
I thought it was everything now since James Krause ruined betting.
Yeah, this is before James Krause. This is before Krause.
Oh, okay. It's before Krause. It's like BC and AD. Like something BK before Krause.
And he ended up losing, right? Which is the worst part. So he lost his whole purse. So, and you know, he still had to pay his like training people and his agents. So
right, yeah, I know.
So
he's in the negative fighting.
So every time he came to a show, I would tell that story. I go, you know, he bet his whole, you know, person, and everyone would clap. And I go, and he lost. And his wife, he said his wife was so mad at him, right? Of course.
I bet.
Well, now he has a girlfriend. So, like, I guess the wife, the last time he came, he was some hot girl, definitely a hottie. So he, and then this other guy came, you know, you realize with these like new generations. So I did a show in Texas. And three guys came. Kyle Crutchmer, who's like four-time, I think, All-American or three-time All-American. He came with this guy, Nick Piccinini, right? And so he comes, and I was like, I knew he wrestled. I looked him up while he was there. The guy was a four-time New York State champion. He was a four-time, two-time All-American in college. He was ranked third going into the NCAAs the COVID year. Where they didn't, so they didn't have a tournament. They just like placed like what you would have placed. They did, which is the stupidest.
They just predicted it.
Yeah, and now he's 4-0 in MMA, and I'm like, yo, man, this guy. You know, I was on stage, like, this guy shows you that you could be a 4-time state champion and still get no pussy because he was by himself. But man, I mean, could you imagine having to go against that guy? And he's light too. He's like 125 or 130 for he's like a light guy, but man,
I have a hard time imagine being intimidated by a 130-pound man. Like, that's what I was thinking. When I was fighting the UFC, I'd see how little some of those guys were. Like, that Tyson Griffin, I think I saw in person. He couldn't have been 5 foot tall. Like, one of the smallest people I've ever seen. Yeah. And he didn't like the bigger dudes. You could tell he had short man syndrome because he was very short. But at his strength couture, I tried to make a joke to him, and he didn't have any. And not even about being short, just trying to talk to him, make a joke, and he was kind of hateful toward me. And I thought, I can't imagine, like, how nice would it be? Like, I'm looking at facing Mark Hunt. You're looking at facing a guy that weighs 125 pounds. Like, one of us is, you know what I mean? And we both have practically the same size head, you know what I mean? Or whatever. I'm just getting hit with a lot bigger fists and a lot more weight behind it. So that's, I'd be surprised if some of those lightweight guys ever even get like brain damage or, you know, CTE or anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to talk
about the conversation.
No. It's pretty hot here. by the way, so they say, don't meet your heroes. Have you ever met anybody that was a complete dick that you thought was?
Roy Jones Jr. I gave him the whole, man, I've been a fan of yours since you were fighting amateurs. You're one of the reasons I wanted to fight. And he was like, cool. And then walked away, like, after he took a picture with me. And so I was like, oh, all right. So the guy that introduced me to him, I said, he goes, you meet Roy? I said, yeah, Roy can suck a dick, you know, or whatever like that. He's like, what happened? He goes, dude, I said, he just was like, in the middle of my conversation, kind of like you, just walked off, like nobody talking.
You guys became friends, though, right?
A little bit. I mean, after he went over and told Roy who I was, he goes, oh, I didn't know he was a UFC fighter. But then that kind of made me mad, like, oh, you're going to treat me differently because, you know what I mean, I'm a, you know, UFC fighter. But I was never obviously nearly as famous as him or as good at what I did. But it's, and I know it gets old, man, people coming up to you. But I'm sure you do, too. I try to make everybody, when you meet people after shows, I try to make them all feel like, ask them what their name is, what they do for a living, whatever, you know. I'm not ever going to remember them. And that's probably my fault. That's why people come up to me all the time and I have no idea who they are. And I talk to them for like 10 minutes and they leave and my son or daughter be like, who is that? I'm like, I have no idea, you know, but I must have. But I try to make it, especially for the younger kids, man, make it special for, not special, but make it so they actually feel like I know them and I'll remember them and, you know, yeah, stuff no, like that.
100%.
Yeah. Like I said, if I've been doing it as long as Roy Jones, maybe you do get tired of people doing it all the time. But those people forget who's paying the bills. You know what I mean? They forget that if those people weren't going to the shows, they wouldn't be anybody. You know,
like, Roy Jones was all like, I mean, he was like so next level. He would have, remember he had basketball games before his fights?
Yeah. He played a full league game or two and then go beat somebody up. He was amazing, man. He never made crazy money because he never messed with Don King at all. And I had an old boxing trainer. He used to actually manage a couple of world champions. He was a really old, great guy named Wes Raymond. His dad was a champion in the 30s. But he told me the problem with Don King he said Don King was still the best promoter. He would promise you $10 million, you would only get $5 million. But your $5 million was still $3 million more than you were getting from anybody else. You know what I mean? He said, so you're going to get robbed, but you're still going to make more than somebody that's not going to rob you. So,
one of the biggest dicks that I met was Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller.
Really?
Yeah, I was in the movie Zoolander. I was in the movie. I was a stand-in for David Bowie. Right. So, first of all, the whole thing was chaos. Like, there was like 9 fires. It was in like a warehouse in New Jersey or something. And it was like 10-5. It was all kinds of things going wrong. He was completely over budget. And this was his first big director debut. So he was all like nervous. You know, they have a thing called an AD, which is an assistant director, right? Which is the person under. Right. I was there for 2 weeks. He went through 11 ADs. He fired right. Every day someone was fired. Like there was a person that came that was crying. Like, please, I need this job. Like he was a fucking tyrant. And they it was all models, right? All these models were there. And it was all about how shallow the model agency is, right? So every day he would start the day by lining everyone up and just pick people that were good looking. Walk right in front of them and go, you. So then right away people start crying if they weren't picked. So it was so I'm sitting there next to David Bowie and we're talking and I'm a stand-in. So I have to be next to him. It wasn't like because we had to like basically, you know, I was the same height as him. And he was right next to me and they had to do the shots. So my dad, you know, used to manage Alice Cooper and David Bowie was a big Alice Cooper fan. He used to always watch all the Alice Cooper shows before he was David Bowie. He actually took a lot of his like. So I was like, oh, yeah, my dad managed Alice Cooper, you know. Oh, Alice. And Dave Bowie's eyes lit up and he was so nice. Right. Like we were just and he was like such a nice guy. And then and. I don't know if this is from Ben Stiller or it was an AD, but someone comes up to me. She goes, excuse me. Ben Stiller's upset that you're hogging the time he wants with David Bowie. So will you please stop talking to David Bowie? But this is not from David Bowie. I'm not even sure it was even from Ben Stiller or it was just an AD jumping the gun. But, but after that, I was like, what a fuck it. Like, you know,
That reminds me of when I met R. Kelly, which he was dressed like Zorro. It was an odd night. But I was at R. Kelly's studio with some. It's a long story how I got there. But this girl's like, you want to meet Kells is what they call him. I was like, I really don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter to me. He hadn't been proven to be a pedophile at this point yet. Just suspected. Right. And so she tries to bring him over. And some guy goes, wait a minute. Let me ask Kells if it's okay. And I was like, dude, you know what? You and Kells can go suck a dick. Like, I don't. You know what I mean? Like I don't need to approach the king, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Like I hadn't been put out a hit in 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
But he came over, he introduced, just, oh, it's okay. He goes, say he was a UFC fighter, huh? I said, yeah, I used to be. He goes, just don't beat up me. And I was like, oh no. I said, I only fight for money or if anyone shows me the least amount of disrespect. And right. Like looked at his assistant guy, you know, whatever, like in the eyes or whatever. And then he asked me how old I was. And I told him, I think it's 35 or something or whatever. He goes, how you stay looking so young? I said, steroids, like even growth hormone. And then he was like, inboard, you crazy. Like started laughing. I said, no, really? Like, that's really how I do. And I said, how do you stay looking so young? And he looked off into space like he stopped and goes, I just stay on stage, inward, like that, like looking off into space. And I looked off with him into, you know, the lights that he was looking into. And I thought that was amazing. Like, here I am spending all this money on HGH and all I had to do was stay on stage. It was
Yeah, well, now he's staying in a cell. So, Don Fry, how are you, man?
Okay, how are you guys?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I've been watching you. You've been killing it on Fight Pass. You're all over the internet again. Everyone's very proud of you.
What is Don on? I keep hearing Don's on something, but I don't see it. What is it? Is it a show? Is it like what?
I don't know either. Oh, Tea and Whiskey. We did this show, Tea and Whiskey, for Fight Pass.
So you have to be on Fight Pass?
Yeah. Okay. You're going to spend $5 a month, you know, or $10 a month. You know, it's out of your budget, so never mind, you know.
Right, yeah, I was just saying, I might have to go find me if I want to watch Tea and Whiskey.
So, all right, let's get to the fights. Did you watch last week's fights from England, Sean?
Who fought? Because probably not. But
Tom Aspinall, he beat Marcin Tybura. He just went out and just killed him. Like, first round finish. He called for the winner of Gon versus Spivak, which is also, I guess they're headlining Paris. But I guess everyone's saying...
He's like, no one's heard of me. Let me call out someone that no one else has heard of either. Let me call out another no-name fighter.
So people are saying that him versus John Jones is the fight to make. And, you know, if John Jones, they're already assuming he beats Stipe. No one's even giving Stipe a chance in this. which is pretty stupid, I think, because John Jones is like 50 years old. I mean, he's also like, he's getting up there. A lot of people get old overnight. Hasn't happened to him yet, but we don't know. So then John Jones writes on Twitter, which he deleted, "Everyone's the next big thing until I beat them." And then it's like, wait, who was that guy anyway? A few months ago, Gon was the absolute future of MMA. Best footwork, fastest heavyweight we've ever seen, most athletic. Now everyone's like, who is that guy? He kind of has a point there. Like, I can't really argue.
Yeah, you're damn right. You're damn right. Well, I mean, Gon was scared to death. He just pissed himself, you know, before he left the bus. You know, so shit, they followed a trail of piss all the way down to the cage. You know, I mean, shit. He was scared to death of Jones.
Bisping thinks that Aspinall runs through John Jones. I mean, they're both from England, so he might be a little biased there. Did you see the fight between Aspinall last week,
Don? Jeez, you think? No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know they were on, you know, that early. Were they on early then?
Yeah, they were on early. Storylenko destroyed Meatball Molly. Meatball Molly got killed quick. And that was like, it was tough because everyone was there for Meatball Molly. Like, it was like one of those things where everyone was like super behind her. And then she got killed. Nathaniel Wood beat Andre Feely. And then Paul Craig, I thought he retired. He came back and he's got hair plugs, right? And he's very proud of the hair plugs. Like, he's got a full set of hair now. It used to be, if you had hair plugs, you didn't really tell anybody. This is a whole new culture now of people really excited about their hair plugs. You know, I guess if you're and then Johnny Parsons. So he beats Daniel Roberts, who goes by Hot Chocolate, right? And then he may have been the worst call out I've ever seen. I'll show you guys the call out. He calls out Patty Pimlet, who I think is like one or two weight classes below him. I'll show you
I bet he's not right now.
That's a safe call out.
Patty's more above him right now.
And I'll show you guys what happened. Let me see. I'll show you guys this. Tell me what you guys think of this call out. So,
you want to suck?
Oh, go ahead.
Hey, you want to suck? Or not, because I'm the slobberknot. Let's go. I'll go down the lightweight and I'll knock that stupid haircut off your head. Let's go.
So he goes, do you want a slug or not? Because I'm the slug or not. And then he said,
oh, okay. I thought he was asking something else. I couldn't understand what he was saying.
I think that guy should be calling anyone else's haircut stupid. Like, that's out of line. That's like Michael Bruce being called somebody with a one-eyed. You one-eyed Brit, like I don't know.
That was a bit, and then
Bruce Buffer making fun of somebody's feminine. You know?
Yeah,
it's like Bruce Buffer called Dominic Cruz gay.
Oh, okay, I knew. All right, so that's 36 minutes into it. Now, this week, all right, we got to talk about. It's a great weekend for fighting. It's the best, but this Poirier versus Gaethje. Bad mother, the BMF belt is a fucking made up belt. Every time they mention the BMF belt, I get less interested in this. Even the announcer who was like, this is for the coveted, you know, that guy that does all the like the countdowns, he has that like cool voice, and he's like, this is for the coveted BMF belt. I'm like, this is not, first of all, it makes up Masvidal, who was the BMF champion, has lost three times. So wouldn't the guy that beat him get that belt? Like, how do you have a belt that is never on the line? And then Masvidal comes and he gives the belt. Look, I'm excited for the fight. I want to see Poirier versus Gaethje. Great fight. It's going to be action. But, I mean, if we're going to make up dumb belts, we should have, like, the wettest vagina belt and the most curved dick belt and the hairiest ball sack belt. I mean, what are we doing here? The tightest pussy belt. I mean, like, let's just go all the fucking way and just make up a bunch of belts.
They'll have an interim BMF belt before long. Like, I guarantee it'll be this for the interim BMF belt. But if they're going to do the hairiest ball sack belt, they probably need to name the champ first. Or name the contender. I think Bruce Buffer should be the one to pick those because he's got the most experience.
Okay, this is not going to be a Buffer is gay roast. Okay, there's no more Buffer is gay on the thing. But Don Fry.
I'll go back to Brendan Dunn.
Wow.
What I do like,
I didn't know we were.
What I do like is that Don Fry is on some list now of the baddest motherfucker, the like bet of all time, which is kind of cool that at least Fry is getting props out of this. But don't you think, Don and Sean, this is kind of silly that we're just making up belts?
It's definitely a gimmick, man. I wish if they were going to do it, they would treat it like a real belt. You know what I mean? Like, I never understood WWE. You had the Intercontinental Championship and then the World Championship. I'd be like, but isn't the continent inside the world? You know what I mean? So this guy's like the second tier champ. I'm really confused with the television champ. So that's only people that fight on TV. You know, like, I don't understand they fight. But if they're going to make it a belt like that, I'm all for gimmicks, man. I love Pride. Pride was the biggest gimmick stuff ever. I mean, guys would be wearing shoes. Guys wear a mask. Like, you know, sometimes you never knew what was going to happen. But if you're going to do that, like, I think it actually should have to be contested. There should be criteria. Like, people voted or whatever. But Don would have been the original BMF. That would have been awesome. Like, he really would. If it started with him, then maybe I could deal with it. But UFC, man, with these interim belts and they just name, someone's new. It's like, I don't know how many belts haven't been won, but they had an interim championship belt. The guys fight. It's a draw, and then they have two more guys fight for another interim championship that are neither guy. And I'm like, wait a minute. So there's four interim contenders? Like, I'm so confused. Meanwhile, the other guy, the real champ, has only not fought in 3 weeks, and they had to come up with an interim belt. Like, I don't know.
I mean, shouldn't the belt go to the number one guy in the weight class? I mean, call me old-fashioned, but the champion should get a belt. This other shit is like – I mean, Don, what do you think?
They've proven that pay-per-views sell better if they put a belt on there. So they don't care what it is. If they just say there's a belt on the line. I just wonder, when they strip the guys in these belts, how are they keeping their pants up? Like, I've never been able to figure that out. That was
Don, what do you think of the BMF belt, Don?
That was good. I think it's just a gimmick, you know? It's a funny gimmick because, like Sean said, You have to have a title on the line, a belt on the line to get people interested, you know, to dish out, what is it, $100 now? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to see a main event, which it doesn't have anything on the line for.
Yeah. You know, but
you want to see some kind of title.
I just think it's cheesy, to be honest. I love the fight.
It was like way back when. Pride would have their main event if it wasn't a title fight, and it'd be a 3-round fight. And I told him, no, it's got to be a 5-round fight to be a main event. And, you know, lo and behold, 8 or 9 months later, it became their idea, you know, and then they started that, you know, shit.
Now, who wins the fight?
So can't give advice to, you know, promoters.
Now, who wins the fight? I honestly think Poirier wins. I know that Gaethje says he changed his style now. He's a smarter fighter. But it just seems that anytime Poirier fights a guy who fights like Poirier, Poirier wins. When he fights Michael Chandler's of the world, when he fights these guys that just the Justin Gaethje's, anybody that has like reckless abandon, goes punch for punch, I think Poirier wins. Where he doesn't win is when he gets to Charles Oliveira's, he gets to Khabib's, the guys that aren't going to go. I don't think you're going to out Poirier. So I think Poirier wins this fight. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, Poirier tends to be, he's more technical boxing when it comes to the guys that slug, so he usually can be the one to land the punch first or counter better, like he did on, Connor. It's fun to watch, though. I don't know that Gaethje will ever change his style. I don't know that he'll be able to talk by the time he's 40 with the way he fights, man, but that guy's got balls. He really is one of the toughest things I've ever seen in my life, man, when it comes to taking, I mean, he'll take three to give you one, and his one is going to be worse, but it's amazing when he actually listens to his corner, when he listens to... who's his boxing coach? Trevor Whitman. When he listens to him, he feels so much better. You know what I mean? Than just slugging on crazy. But that one he lands when he is going crazy, man. I would say if it comes down to technically fighting, if it goes longer or goes to decision, I think Poirier beats him. But if Gaethje can land the one big one, which he's been known to do, you know, on occasion or whatever, he can win by knockout. But I don't think he'll beat him by decision. I think Poirier is just too technical. I wouldn't like to see it, but if I was – trying to coach Justin Gaethje, I would like to see him mix a takedown or two in just to keep Poirier guessing.
Like he's an All-American wrestler. You would never know he's an All-American wrestler. You would never.
Far better wrestler than Poirier, but he won't use it. So
here's where I got a little concerned about the fight was when Poirier. I watched the countdown. He goes, "I don't need to fight for money anymore." He goes, "I'm set for life. My family's set. I'm doing this because this excites me. It seems like anytime anyone says that, they fucking lose.
Yeah.
Like when you don't have to fight for money anymore, money's a big.
I've never believed when guys say that they're not doing it for the money, then why don't they just go fight for free in the gym to do a full on MMA match if they really love it? It's the same guys who said, I was never scared before a fight. I've seen them before the fights. They're scared. Everybody's scared of something. You may be scared of being, I was always scared of being embarrassed. Before I went out, I'm like, God, I don't care if I break both arms, both legs, and have lifetime injuries. Just please don't let me get embarrassed on TV. You know what I mean? Like, at least let me win or put on a good showing. Like, I don't want to get knocked out. I lived in perpetual fear of the one-punch knockout. First punch thrown, I get knocked out. Or get like how Ben Askren has to live with the flying knee the rest of the
time. Absolutely.
That was what I was always afraid of. I was never afraid of getting hurt. Every now and then I'd be a little afraid, like, God, I could get brain damage or, you know, something like that. But mainly it was just, would you train brain cells to win so that you're not embarrassed? You know what I mean? I'd be like, yeah, probably. So.
Don, who do you think wins the fight, Don? Who do you think wins, Gaethje or Poirier?
You know what? I like them both. You know, Poirier's the toughest kid in the trailer park. Gaethje's, you know, an Arizona boy. So I got a weenie out and not make a call on this one.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Whenever I don't give a prediction, I go, what do you think? I do the same thing. It's because I don't want these guys watching it, and I'm going to stop doing that. But I understand now. Pereira against Jan Blachowicz. Here's my thoughts on this. We really have no idea how good Pereira is at MMA because he's only like 5-1 or 6-1. And the wins that he had, the big wins were his win. He won an LFA. He didn't look good the first fight. His wins, his first win against Izzy, he was losing four rounds and then caught him. Right. And then when he fought Sean Strickland, Strickland wanted to beat him in kickboxing. So this
great point.
So he just goes punch for punch. So we really don't know how good he is at MMA. Now, I'm not saying he's not a world class kickboxer. He is. He's obviously amazing. But MMA is a different sport. We know how good Jan Blachowicz is. I think Jan Blachowicz is going to take him down and grind him out. I don't think he's dumb enough to go punch for punch with this guy like Sean Strickland is. Don, your thoughts?
Never underestimate the stupidity of a prize fighter. You know?
Damn, I thought Don was going to say a Polish fighter. It's like, you took my joke, Don. Son of a bitch. I thought he was going to say a Polish fighter.
So you think
people say they want to try, they want to try this style, you know, it's stupid. You stick with what got you to the dance, you know, and then you add things to it, but you always keep the original thing to you.
But Blachowicz has never really fought dumb fights, so he's not one of these guys that seems like that lets pride get in the way.
He's not your typical Polish guy. No, I actually released a video. I started my own YouTube channel, by the way, McCorkle Minute, at McCorkle Minute. Anyway, I've been releasing some of my old interviews. Before I was mildly famous, I cornered Tim Sylvia.
Is it a sex channel?
Yeah. Before I was mildly famous, I cornered Tim Sylvia against Mariusz Pudzianowski, and I kept trying to get him to say after he won, how many pole locks does it take to beat Tim Sylvia or to beat a former UFC heavyweight champ in a fight? Apparently more than one, even if it's the strongest one,
hilarious.
Or whatever. And he would say it. So I said it on that interview that Tim had said that. And then I used it when I beat Pudzianowski. That's what I said at the press conference. It did not go over well. It was in Poland. And I was like, I don't know if you guys ever heard this joke, but how many pole locks does it take to beat Sean McCorkle on a fight? I said, apparently more than one, even the strongest one. So I think to answer your question, I think if Jan beat Stylebender and beat him the way he did, Stylebender is the same fighter, but better than
Right.
What's his name?
You know what I mean?
Right. Same style fighter. I think he'll use the same strategy, and I think he beats him. I don't know what makes Jan so good because he looks slow and clumsy to me, and like everything is awkward. But maybe sometimes that's that can be a benefit sometimes. You know what I mean? It's weird. Like there's guys. I don't remember what boxer it was, but there was a guy that fought Floyd Mayweather. I don't think it was Ricardo Mayorga or something, and he was real unorthodox, and because of that, he was able to land shots on him he wouldn't normally land. You know what I mean? Because he's so unorthodox.
You know, Burton. It was that guy that fought like a drunk guy, the drunk master, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. I just know he fought a really weird style, and it was actually giving Mayweather problems. And that's what a lot of people thought Conor McGregor was going to beat Floyd Mayweather, because he was going to use a karate style. I was like, they would have figured that out a long time ago if that was a good boxing style. But no, I think Jan does things a little slow and a little backward and a little off, like his timing's off sometimes, which throws guys off. I've grappled. Chris Lytle was a great example of that. He would roll the wrong way in jiu-jitsu sometimes. Like, to get out of something, he'd go the opposite way, and you thought he was going to go the correct way, so you planned your counter based on that. Before you know it, he's on your back choking you because he did something wrong, you know, because you got so used to guys doing stuff the right way. Like, if I sweep him, he's going to try to, you know, go on all fours, do this and that, and then when they don't do it, it throws you off and gives them the chance to lock something in, you know. So all that to say, I think Jan will beat him. I think he'll take him down and clumsily beat him to a decision. That's what I think.
There was a guy I grappled with, a guy who hung out with Mayhem all the time, and he had like autism times 100. But he was, forgot his name.
You know, Mayhem? That figure. Imagine that, huh?
The nicest guy you've ever met. The nicest guy. Matt Horwich.
You're talking about Brendan Schaub and said he was nice.
Matt Horwich. And he would, when you grappled with him, he would tell you what he was going to do, because he would tell himself and say it out loud. And say it out. And then all of a sudden you were like, he's like, okay, I'm now going to take my right hand and put it there. And you were like, before you know it, you're like, what the fuck?
You're like, I'll tell you the worst thing that ever happened to me is somebody figured out I was extremely ticklish. Like, I am extremely ticklish and I don't like it. Like, I don't like if people tickle me trying to be funny, even as a kid. And when Matt Mitrione found that out, I would have Matt, I'd be on top and side control, and he'd start poking me underneath my armpit with his finger or around my neck. And I'd be like, dude, like, stop, you know, or whatever. And he would get out of stuff doing that. And I was like, that is the gayest grappling I've seen since I was on mattbattle.com. I don't know if you've been on mattbattle.com, but you could get on there. But guys, smaller guys started using it against me. They would start like trying to tickle me in my private parts. Now they would start trying to like tickle my neck or under my arms or like my ribs. I'd be like, dude, stop. It's gay. Like, knock it off. You know what I mean? But it really would work. I would have to let go of something when they tickled me. I was that ticklish. So I don't know how we got talking about that. What?
I don't know. Meanwhile, a fight that I don't want to watch is Tony Ferguson, Bobby Green. So Tony Ferguson has lost 5 fights in a row. He has not won a round in 5 fights. So he hasn't won a round in 15 fights. I don't know if there was a title fighter there or whatever. Maybe there's more. But in 15 rounds, he hasn't won a round. And he's fighting. He's fighting Bobby Green. He got a DUI a couple months ago. Tony did. You know, he tweeted out some crazy shit. Maybe he needs money, and this is the UFC's way of like giving him a send off or something. He's saying things like, "I'm just reaching my prime. I'm in the best shape of my life." This is what he's saying, right? This is what he's telling everybody. And I like Tony Ferguson a lot. He's a buddy of mine. I do not want to see him get beat up and get really hurt. And Bobby Green, as dumb as he fights a lot, which is his hands down, his chin up, he's got great speed and he's got great knockout ability. And his last fight he won, I think he got disqualified, but the headbutt is what kind of knocked out Jared Gordon or something. Something weird happened. But man, why can't they just give him Mike Jackson? Why can't they just keep Mike Jackson in the UFC? Doesn't matter how many fights he loses. And every time they get a guy like BJ Penn or Tony Ferguson or who a legend, they just have him beat up Mike Jackson. Everyone feels good. Mike Jackson gets paid. Like, this is going to be rough. Sean, this is going to be rough.
Dude, I've never understood the UFC. Actually, I do understand because it's completely heartless and they're bloodthirsty. Like, I don't know why they feed they used to do that in pro wrestling. The old guy would put the new generation over. But this is real life with real damage and real consequences. A guy like Diego Sanchez, for example, has shortened his life fighting for the UFC. He had no other option but to keep fighting because he's not financially set, you know, or whatever. So he keeps fighting, and they keep giving him monsters, like young up-and-coming guys. And I'm like, why can't they? What's wrong with giving a guy who's done everything Tony Ferguson has done for the UFC? Give him a guy he can beat. Like you're saying, maybe not Mike Jackson, but give him a guy he should beat, you know, or whatever. Like, even if you got to bring him up in his first fight in UFC, you know, a guy or whatever. Like, every now and then just get him a win to keep him relevant, keep him, you know, around. But they're always about the next guy. That's what the next generation. when they first signed me, I said no to the first contract offer because they didn't want to tell me who I was fighting. And I said, dude, I'm not trying to get fed to like one of your up and coming guys, like heavyweights that you know is going to murder everybody, like Cain Velasquez or something. I said, I'm not interested in doing that. And like, we'll just sign the promotional agreement. We'll get you a bout agreement later. And then I, you know, Monte Costa, my agent, he said they promised it would be another first time UFC guy. And I was like, well, okay, then, you know, I thought I was going to be fighting an unknown guy. And they got me. They got me, was what they did. They tricked me. But it's, I don't understand why. And it isn't like the NBA where, you know, you retire from the NBA after putting in years of service, I guess. And they have a coaching job for you, a job with the NBA, a job with whatever. The UFC was doing that before their new management. Not very much, but they were getting like Forrest Griffin a job, Chuck Liddell. These guys, man, these are guys that literally bled, took brain damage, fought for practically nothing for most of their career, maybe made a little money at the end, and then they just tell them, well, have fun, bare knuckle boxing, you know what I mean, or whatever, like just send them off.
I mean, two things. I heard that from a guy that allegedly worked at the UFC that they kept Diego on contract because they didn't want him to do bare knuckle boxing.
Right.
Which I guess is nice, but like, why don't we just give him money? Give him a desk job rather than give him a fight.
There's no reason to keep even a guy like Don, man. You know, Don had his problems with UFC for a long time, and they will say, well, that wasn't the Zuffa era when he fought, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like guys like that, dude, there's opportunities for guys to make money on appearances. I mean, you're with WME. Dude, tell me they can't find a commercial Don can do. WME
even on
can't
the Ultimate Fighter, make him, you have to have Tony as a coach. Well, you're the main coach.
Right.
He has to be on the coaches.
Yeah, well, they don't pay the coaches. That's the problem. They don't pay the coaches on the Ultimate Fighter. They give them a car or something at the end. Like, hey, here's a car. Like, oh, thanks. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
No, I'm saying, like, even the coaches. But like a Ryan Bader who's there right now, like, Bader is one of Chandler's coaches. He doesn't get paid.
Right. When I heard about it, the guys I know that coach said they got like a per diem and they paid for their like hotel and stuff. But as far as actually getting paid, they gave them something like a motorcycle at the end of it. And they're like, great, now I got to pay taxes on a $30,000, $40,000 motorcycle. Like, I got to pay.
That's what Mayhem was mad about. Don, what did you think about this Tony Ferguson, Bobby Green fight?
I'm with you. I'm a fan of Tony Ferguson's. I think they got to get him somebody softer, you know, for on his way out. Let him go out, you know, let him go out with some wins, you know. Give the guy some fucking respect and show that you appreciate what he's done for the company, you know, instead of destroying him completely. I mean, you're trying to destroy his name. You're trying to destroy his brain. You know, what's he going to have left?
Or give him a guy with no knockout power. There are guys out there that don't have a lot of knockouts. You know,
give him what's his name? Ryan. Right. He's the guy who only grapples.
Ryan Hall.
Ryan Hall. Yeah, where he's not going to take any damage if he gets, you know, beaten, something like that. But or even worst case scenario, put him and Diego in together, and at least one guy gets a win. You know what I mean? Or whatever his win bonus. Like at least. But I love, man. They are hard. Well, you know, like I said, I love Dana. Man, he did some stuff for me he didn't have to do, so I'm loyal to him forever. But like that slap league type stuff where you're paying guys $2,000 to get brain damage, like I would think would be beneath him, you know, at this point. Like I think a lot of stuff UFC does, it should be beneath them. I mean, they're making, dude, they love to brag about they're making, we made $12 billion last year, but fighter pay has gone up 10%, you know, or whatever in the past 20 years. Like they're paying barely more now minimum than they were paying when I started in 2010. So that's 13 years later. But like I said, man, that WME is a big, powerful, rich company. They own the WWE now. You're telling me you can't get these guys. Tony Ferguson can't make an appearance on WWE and make a little money, like anything, you know, like just get him a signing, get him something.
Or
you know what
have
I mean?
Him do one of those grappling things. Like they have all these grappling
something. Yeah, like anything.
Like have Tony Ferguson's team versus Uriah Faber's team on the grappling thing. Now,
yeah, so it's really okay sometimes. Like they don't have to make on every event, you know, like it's unbelievable.
Yeah, like Sean said, what they could do. They can stick them in a bunch of movies, you know, and then you make the minimum wage of, you know, to get a SAG card, a SAG-AFTRA card, and you make the minimum or to qualify for health insurance, and then they get health insurance. Just keep putting them in movies and have a SAG pay the guy and give him benefits, you know, and that way that helps everybody out.
Yeah, now, as long as you're willing to fight for nothing just to be on TV, you're not going to get anywhere, man. These guys are unbelievable. I've heard guys all the time, I would fight for free if I was on TV in the UFC. And I'm like, dude, what are you nuts? Like, I wouldn't fight for anything, you know?
By the way, I got my Boz shirt, by the way, just so you guys know.
He's got the same haircut as that fighter earlier that was calling people out.
I
haven't been.
All right. Also, we got Stephen Thompson against Michel Paheia. So that's the guy from who was in the circus in Brazil. For a while, he was just doing like flips all the time and losing fights, but being very entertaining, like all this crazy shit. Well, now he's on a 5-fight winning streak, but he doesn't do anything fun anymore. Like he doesn't do those crazy backflips, but he's not gassed by the second. So he's fighting Stephen Thompson. Michelle lost. He actually lost at a scale today. He missed weight by 3 pounds. Daniel Cormier says he looks deathly ill. I guess the fight's still on.
I can't believe he missed weight by 30 pounds. That is the biggest 170-pound fighter since Anthony Johnson. That dude is massive, man. When he goes out and fights, he's three times the size of the guy he's fighting. I'm like, how does he make 170, man? Like,
you're talking about Michelle? You're talking about this guy?
Yeah. Paheia, yeah. He is. If you watch him fought, I think Diego Sanchez, he fought him or whatever. Yeah. He was three times the size of Diego Sanchez. I was like, dude, I can't even believe they're in the same. But they got mad at him for playing around and clowning when he's in there. And then they get mad when he doesn't. Like he's not entertaining anymore or whatever. It's I love the dual messaging from UFC. If you fight an exciting fight and lose, we'll keep you. You fight a boring fight and win, we'll cut you. But you fight an exciting fight and lose, they still cut you. You fight a boring fight and win, they cut you. Like it's like be exciting but win. Like you know, like
now, I still think he beat Stephen Thompson. Stephen Thompson is like 1-3 in his last four or 1-2. He won his last fight against what's his name, Kevin Holland. But Kevin Holland also wanted to prove that wrestling is stupid, so he gets into a kickboxing fight with a karate master. And I think before that he lost to Bilal Muhammad. Like he got like it was one score was like 30-26 or something. So I think that Thompson loses this fight. I think that Michelle wins this fight unless he had a terrible weight cut and this and that. But I think he wins this fight. Don, who wins this fight? Now that it's summer, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals for sunny, active days. I know I am, okay? And Factor, which is America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit. Now, number two, number one, it can help you fuel up fast with flavorful and nutritious ready-to-eat meals delivered right to your door. You'll save time, you'll eat well, and you'll stay on track reaching your goals, okay? Are you too busy with summer plans to cook? I am. It takes me forever to cook, and I ruin the meals. But I want to make sure that I'm eating well, and so should you. Well, with Factor, skip the trip to the grocery store and skip the chopping and the prepping and the cleaning, okay? While still getting the flavor and the nutritional quality you need. The Factor is fresh, never frozen. Ew. Their meals are ready in just 2 minutes. That's right, 2 minutes. Although when I do stuff in 2 minutes, my wife complains, okay? But not with Factor. All you got to do is heat and enjoy and then get back outside and soak up this warm weather. Vitamin D, all right? Looking for calorie-conscious options this summer? You can try the delicious, dietitian-approved calorie-smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving. That's nothing. You burn that off, I don't know, jogging, all right? You need an extra boost to support your wellness goals this summer? I do. We'll try the Protein Plus meals with 30 grams of protein. Hell yeah. Get rough. Look at these guns, people. All right? So check it out. Check out Factor. Head to factormeals.com/roasted50 and use code roasted50 and get 50% off your first box. That's half off your first box. That's code roasted50 at factormeals.com/roasted50 to get 50% off your first box. All right. Check it out. You're going to thank me later. I got this cute dog. She's teething right now, but she's adorable. All right. No more biting. You got to get some chew toys. So thank you guys so much. Hope you guys are having a wonderful day and check out Factor right now.
Grand slams, no hitters, and double plays are back. That's right. And there's no better place to get on the MLB action than FanDuel, America's number one sports book and official partner of Major League Baseball. And guess what, people? New customers in Massachusetts get in on the action with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/Boston. And finally, you can bet on all your favorite sports from the money line to point spreads to player props and more. I love it, okay? If I'm going to bet, I'm going to go on FanDuel. So now, bet on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Don't miss your chance to get $200 of bonus bets. Win or lose. How great is that? Okay? Visit FanDuel.com/Boston and make every moment more. That's FanDuel, the official partner of Major League Baseball. You got to be 21 and older and present in Massachusetts. Okay, your first online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable. And bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Help is here. So is hope. Hope and help. Gambling help line ma.org or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. That's FanDuel. Check it out now. Right now. You want to bet? That's where you go.
Werner, I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about. Sorry.
All right.
If I don't know who he was. If he showed him a clip, he would remember. You don't forget that guy. The guy that does. You don't remember, Don, the guy did a backflip to go into side control? He went up to a guy and did a backflip literally to get into side control when the guy was on the ground. He's a Brazilian guy.
Yeah,
he does some crazy stuff, man. But I think if they fight the way they've been fighting, I think Pereira wins. But I think Stephen Thompson is probably the more – or was the more skilled fighter. He hasn't looked great as of late, but I can't believe he's not a youth pastor. Like Stephen Thompson is like every youth pastor I've ever met.
He is. No, but he works for his dad's karate camp or something, and he drives a school bus. He's well, like
some people would say karate is not a religion, but I would disagree. But he seems like every youth pastor I ever had growing up, except he wasn't molesting the kids. So
right. So Derek Lewis said he's going to have abs this fight. And he kind of came close. He actually looks great. However, he's been quitting. I don't know how he's still ranked 10th. He lost 3 in a row. He lost 4 of his last 5. And he's just been quitting. Like, legitimately fucking quitting. Now, I get it. He's hilarious. He's like, yo, where's Ronda Rousey's fine ass out? He got my balls is hot. He's entertaining. But as far as his fighting goes, it's been nothing but disappointment. I think this is one of these things where everyone keeps remembering how good his wins were and they forget about his losses. But I think he's fighting, what's his name? He's fighting this guy who's really good. And I think he loses this fight again.
If I had to give anybody a guarantee, and I don't even know much about the guy he's fighting, but I guarantee you Derek Lewis loses this fight. Like, I guarantee you the way he's not training. I don't care what they say. Maybe he's eating right. He's got abs. He's not training. You can't know as little about MMA as he knows. Like when he's on the ground, it looks like he's never grappled before, never wrestled before. Striking, he just throws the big right hand. That's all he's got is a big right hand. You know, fake like he's going to shit his pants and then throw a right hand, or fake like he's going to throw up and then throw one. But I love watching him fight. And I love his interviews. But he's talking about a guy who didn't reminds me of Dave Herman. I don't know if you remember Dave Herman, the heavyweight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don, did you fight Dave Herman at one point? Like late in your career?
Yeah, I did. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Don was 50 at the time, and Herman was 20. But, I remember actually talking to Tom Erickson about that. He said Don called Tom and asked him what he thought, and Tom told me, he told Don, you're 50 or whatever it was. Like, I don't think Dave Herman's a good matchup for you. And Don's like, I think I got him. I'm going to teach this young son of a bitch some lessons or whatever. But I had trained with Dave Herman, which I think is only one of 5 confirmed times he ever trained. In his whole career. Like, he's the one that said jiu-jitsu didn't work and grew out all his body with the bleach at black and then tried to set up the cops and sue him. He got pulled over and ran from the cops and said he didn't feel safe. And then he's now he's like way alt-right. He's like as far right as it gets, man. Like, he's a political activist. It's like the craziest thing to know him back then and know him now. Like, he told me one time, I told him, I said, I had just started training jiu-jitsu. I met him. He was on IU's wrestling team under the condition that he didn't have to practice. As long as he could practice, he would be on their team because he was a state champion or state qualifier, was never practicing at a small high school. So he wouldn't practice. He would sit out there all the time, finish 7th in the country his senior year without ever practicing. I can have that confirmed from people at IU said he did not practice. He'd always tell my hamstrings hurt, my arms, shoulders hurt. He would just go out. I saw him do a backflip to get out of a single leg one time in a grappling tournament. And I said, I know you could do a backflip. He's like, me neither. Like, he had no idea. He never tried it. But just freak athlete. But I told him, I said, dude, listen, I was 28 at the time, had just started training jiu-jitsu. I was like, man, don't waste your talent. I used to be young and athletic too. Like I was, you know, at 20 years old, I had a 38-inch vertical leap. I was playing basketball in college, could bench press 450 pounds. Like I was a freak athlete, but I didn't do anything with it. I just started my business and people would say all the time, you didn't play football, you didn't do anything. And they would give me like a disgusted look. And I was like, you didn't try for WWE. I'm like, I just started a business. So when I fought in UFC, I was kind of glad about that, that I finally did something with my size and then ended up ruining my back and shoulders. So that was great. But all that to say, I told Dave Herman, I said, dude, don't waste your youth and your athleticism. You could do anything. You could play in the NFL. He's only 20 years old, 21 at this time. You could play in the NFL. You could anything you want to do. You're young enough and athletic enough to do it. He goes, dude, the UFC gives me, and he's like 16-0 at this point, having never trained a day of MMA. Just goes out and beats people up. He's like, dude, if the UFC gives me a contract, I'll make a promise to you right now. I'll put in a solid 2 weeks training camp because I'm dead serious. I'm going to last off for 2 weeks. He said, I'm already in cardio shape, so all I got to do is learn how to fight. And we would grapple, and I would submit him three times a minute. Like, it was ridiculous. Yeah. And I'd be like, dude, you got to learn some jiu-jitsu. Because they're not going to be able to take me down. It doesn't matter because he couldn't be taken down, you know. So
yeah, he was out there. Mario
Rinaldi beat the shit out of a great fight of Mario Rinaldi at Elite XC without having trained a day in his life. Like, just goes out there and just hops around on one leg in a single and punches him rabbit punches for three rounds, you know.
I remember like, when Big Nog put him in an arm bar. He was in the middle of the octagon in Brazil, and you could see him go, fuck me. You can see him fuck me after he said it just doesn't work. So, okay, Lewis is fighting Marco Rogério de Lima, who's got a win over this guy, Waldo Cortez Acosta. This dude, his trainers told me about the guy he fought. He was a pitcher that could throw like 103-mile-an-hour fastball, and he just started fighting, but he throws his punches like a pitcher. and he was like 8-0. By throwing punches like a pitcher, and then he ended up losing because he didn't know how to defend leg kicks. They didn't teach him that in baseball. But
he would have been a little bit better at blocking punches and kicks, you know.
Dude, every one of his fights, because the guy's like, you got to see this guy. He's from like Cuba, and he just throws overhand rights like he's throwing a fucking fastball, and he was knocking everyone out with it. So he beat him. He beat Andrei Arlovsky. He lost to Ivanov. He knocked out Ben Rothwell in 32 seconds, beat Maurice Green. So, yeah, I mean, he's won four of his last five.
What's his name?
This guy, Marco Rogério de Lima. He's the guy fighting Derek Lewis.
All right, I might have to look it up. Yeah, I bet he knocked him out with the right hand. That's my guess.
No, that was the pitcher. The guy he beat was Waldo.
I thought he was the pitcher.
Yeah, the guy he beat was the pitcher. All right, so... All right, now a couple other things that are going on. So the big thing is the boxing match tomorrow, Don Fry. Bud Crawford undefeated against Errol Spence. You have you heard about this? Don?
No.
Okay, these guys are world champions.
No, both, I have not, no.
Okay, both these guys are undefeated, world champions in their prime. Bud Crawford's kid actually is from Omaha, is a state champ wrestler at like, age 7 or like a national champion. He's got two kids that are amazing wrestlers. Just cool that a boxer puts his kid in wrestling, you know? But a video just came out of Crawford was on one of those like theme park rides and his friend passed out on the ride. And do you guys want to see this?
Sure. That's amazing.
So is there
a fight for the BMF belt or is it a different belt? Because I heard boxing is going to institute a BMF belt also.
Oh, dude, this is like the best fight. This is the best boxing match in like 20 years, like for real.
I don't really follow boxing and I've heard of both of them. So they both must be pretty good if I know.
This is like one of those fights, Hagler, Leonard, you know, Hagler, Hearns, two guys in their prime. I mean, it's the only bad thing is that Errol Spence got into a car accident going 180 miles an hour or something and completely wrecked his body. And has only had like 3 or 4 fights since then.
Yeah, they'd do it.
You do kind of wonder how much it impact, but it didn't seem to bother him his last fight. So this guy,
I wonder if when he went to the ER after the car wreck, they accused him of being a drug addict. Cause that was my experience. I flipped my Escalade. They're like, are you just looking for pain pills, sir? I'm like, oh my God, here we go. Like,
all right. So here's Crawford in the blue with his buddy. Watch. So they're on one of those rides. You hear him? So the other guy passed.
I don't have any audio, but one of their heads is steaming.
So he's, this guy's like crying. He doesn't want to do it.
No idea at all.
He's saying, I don't want to do it no more. I don't want to do it no more. And then he passes out. Watch. Passes out. And this guy looks.
I guess he didn't want to do it no more.
He goes, get your ass up. He holds his hand. The guy wakes up and then passes out again. Watch.
That's funny.
I can't help but think some sort of substance had something to do with that passing out. That looked more like he was really drunk or really high, and it sloshed his brain around a little bit or something. I don't know.
So Bellator is having their big event.
Somebody slips.
Yeah. Bellator versus Ryzen this Saturday night. Of course they have it. There's been like 3 months with nothing big going on. Bellator could have had it any one of these nights. But instead, they wait for the biggest boxing match in the last 10 years and the most exciting UFC event in a while to have Pitbull, who's taking the fight on short notice, against Roberto de Souza, Danny Sabatello versus Magomed Kirov. It's a great card, but nobody's going to know what's going on.
It's cool when they co-promote. It's a bunch of guys you never heard of versus another group of guys you never heard of. That's always the... I don't know what Bellator's doing, man. I don't know. I like Scott Coker, and I think that he's a great promoter, but, man, they don't – whoever's running their promotional end of it, man, like, I don't even know. I guess they're on free TV sometimes, right, or am I crazy?
Yeah, isn't no, they are. They're on CBS. So
– yeah,
so
I never – I don't know.
It's the worst. So Don Fry, you got interviewed by this girl named Nina Marie Daniel. Is she a nice girl?
Nina Marie Daniel.
Yeah, you're on a bunch of you're
Nina
on a lot.
Drama.
Yeah, Nina Drama. Yeah, Nina Drama. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. A lot of people are mad at this girl. So the UFC hired this girl. She's a TikTok star. She's got 1.5.
She's a sweetheart. She's a sweetheart, man. She's very nice, very funny too, very fun. She got a good sense of humor. And she stays right up on it. And, you know, she does these bullshit people that get offended and want to sue you for anything. She's funny. She gives it right back at you.
Which is good.
I like her.
Okay. All right. So that's one. That's okay. And I'm sure if I met her, she seems very nice. So people are mad because she's got 1.5 million followers on Instagram and the UFC hired her. But I don't know what she was thinking with this one. Okay, she posts a video of her walking to the cage, which I guess her other videos are, I guess you can't bat, you know, you can't, you know, I guess even Ted Williams batted 300. So here she is. She's walking to the cage, and she just starts twerking. Hold on.
Wait, is she a fighter?
No.
Why is she walking to the cage?
So I don't know what just happened. So she posts that. All the comments are like the cringe. I'm done with the UFC. My eyes are bleeding. Obviously, she's a hot girl, and someone thought this was going to be a funny idea to her to do a cage walk. Because she writes, "Is this the best UFC octagon walk? Rate my dancing 1 to 10." And a lot of people have won.
It would be better if she was doing a parody of a certain fighter than it would be if she just was doing just. Or is that supposed to be a comment on the whole female division where you got to like twerk to get your? I don't know. I don't know. She did see her interview with Don. She seemed like a nice person, but I don't know about like that's. I don't know if that's supposed to be funny or sexy or what. But I don't think it was either.
So, no. And look, I'm a tough comedy critic. Almost, I'm jaded. I'm probably a little bitter. Nothing really makes me laugh anymore. You could say part of me is dead on the inside, but I don't know what that was. I don't know why people put money into that and thought this was going to be funny. I think sometimes people just think loud and abrasive is funny or like annoying is funny. And sometimes annoying is funny, like in movie Dumb and Dumber. You know, that was pretty funny when they were annoying that kid in the middle, when they were in the car. Like, I could watch that all the time. But this was ridiculous. I don't know what happened. I have to see more of her to have a real opinion. But if Don likes her, that's really all that matters. Because if Don
can't all be home runs, that's what I always said. Yeah. Sometimes you swing and you miss.
But if Don says she's cool, then I trust Don's opinion. So Don likes her. But I don't
know. She's good.
Okay.
Yeah, she's good. I like her.
There you go. Well, I trust Don's opinion. So Pat Miletich is fighting Mike Jackson. Have you guys heard about this?
Yeah, I did hear about it.
So Mike Jackson used to, I guess, Pat Miletich trained Mike Jackson for his CM Punk fight. And he will fight his former, I guess it's called Bad Blood and Caged Aggression, Fight Night 2. I guess what happened was, you know, Mike Jackson's super... Pat Miletich went to the what people call the insurrection on January 6th and took a couple pictures and he posted it and he got fired. And he thinks that, I guess, Mike Jackson helped get him fired. So Mike Jackson's posting like, watch me beat up a real life insurrectionist, this and that. Miletich, look, I know Pat Miletich. From what I know, he's not racist. He's a great guy. He's a really, really nice guy. He'll help anybody. I don't know, but Mike Jackson is definitely on the other side of the spectrum. I met Mike Jackson, dude. He seemed like a nice guy too, but you know, he says things like black people can't be racist. No, anyone can be racist, whether you're white, black, yada, yada. So they're fighting.
Right. Absolutely.
Pat is 57 years old. Mike is a lot younger. I still think Pat wins this fight.
How sad is it going to be for CM Punk? How bad is it going to be for CM Punk when Pat Miletich at 57 beats up Mike Jackson, who destroyed CM Punk? That'll be, you know, when they had that fight, I actually had a couple jokes I made on Air Hawani's show about that fight. I don't know if you saw them, but I said that watching Mike Jackson, like when they CM Punk's fight with Mike Jackson, I said the last time I saw a guy named Michael Jackson lay that many blows on a punk, the police raided Neverland Ranch the next day, which Ariel threatened to shut me off the show.
That is a great joke.
I thought it was a good joke. And then the other one I had, I said that I was talking about CM Punk's cardio, and I said that the only fighter I've seen with has been over with his hands on his knees more than CM Punk last weekend in the last year was War Machine. So,
also a great joke.
Yeah, both times Ariel was like, dude, I can't have you on. He quit having me on when I told him that John Jones reminded me, like the whole life reminded me of somebody I didn't know who, and I went to a family reunion, and I realized he reminded me of my Uncle Tom, and that's when he quit having me on after that, when he said he couldn't have me on anymore, but I don't know. It's a good joke.
It is a good joke. I don't know. Why would he be an Uncle Tom, though?
Because... I just wanted to give, I don't know, just say Uncle Tom association with John Jones. I don't know. But I went over, they got mad. I really apologize for. I said that challenging the UFC publicly or asking for more money publicly was the worst idea than going camping with Evan Tanner.
They
actually cut that one and then said I had actually apologized. That's the only one I ever apologized for, because apparently he was a really good dude. I didn't know. And apparently it only been like a year since he committed suicide. I thought it had been like 5 or 10 years or something. Not that that matters. But Ariel actually cut that part of the show, so he couldn't have me on anymore because he was going to get put off air. So, oh well.
So here's the press release for the bad.
I miss blood. Greg's reaction to those things.
For the bad blood, right? He goes, the clash, fueled by personal animosity and stark ideological differences, promises to be a fight of the ages, pitting skill against youth, experience against speed, and conservative views against liberally minded agendas. The upcoming
Miletich fighting himself with skill versus speed and all, and you like, because that none of that describes Michael Jackson or Mike Jackson, but go ahead. Sorry,
the upcoming battle between Miletich and Jackson represents more than just a clash of physical prowess, it embodies a clash of ideologies and principles. Miletich at 57 symbolizes the resilience and determination of an aging warrior, drawing upon a lifetime of evidence and honed skills. Jackson represents youth, speed, and the progressive ideals of the current era. This confrontation between two fighters encapsulates the broader societal divisions and political conflicts prevalent in today's world.
Who in the world? Did Henry Kissinger write this? 35? Golly, who wrote that? That's amazing. I didn't realize we were fighting for family and country in this fight or whatever. Like, I don't know, man.
The fight represents a clash of values and perspectives that will undoubtedly captivate audiences around the world. Yeah, okay. It's on pay-per-view on Caged Aggression
TV. Undoubtedly, yes, undoubtedly.
So let me ask you guys a question. If Pat Miletich wins, does that mean that January 6th was not an insurrection and Black lives don't matter? Or if Mike Jackson wins, does it mean Pat Miletich is a traitor? Because that's what I'm getting from that pre-fight paragraph. Like, it's like, we're going to decide once and for all who was right on January 6th.
I heard that person not laugh like 25 times while writing that. I mean,
I want to see someone read that. That's why with a straight face, besides you, I want to see someone read that before the fight.
Oh, God. Now, Ben Askren is somehow in the best shape of his life. So here he is. Ben. He goes,
well, if there's any time to do it, it's now. His career's over and he doesn't have to stand no money from, there's no possibility of making money fighting. Now's the time to get in shape.
I kept in great shape during retirement. I have zero desire to fight anyone except that loser Jorge. That's what he posts, right? About Masvidal. And Masvidal writes back, is this guy still alive? So
I've heard that before.
So I guess they said they're going to fight. So then he posted the text, Askren did, of him texting Dana to set it up. Dana will not set this up because of maybe if he hadn't lost to Jake Paul, but there's no way he's going to put him in there.
If Masvidal still had the BMF belt, they could hype it and make it, but he lost that apparently. So dude, I don't understand. I, for the life of me, I don't understand. The UFC wouldn't do Khabib versus GSP. They said GSP wanted more money. Like, can't you just make $50 million one night instead of $100 million like UFC? Same with Masvidal and Nate Diaz. Everyone wants to see that again. Everyone would watch Askren and Masvidal again for sure. But Masvidal and Askren are both going to want a lot of money. And the UFC's like, we're not paying more than your contract. I don't understand.
I think it's that Dana hates Jake Paul. And if, let's say, Askren wins, it gives Jake Paul like credibility. Right. I think that would be the problem with that. But so Masvidal said, okay, I'll fight you. He goes, Ben, kiss my ass. You coming out of retirement. I'll send you back into retirement, motherfucker. And then he goes, you're a corny motherfucker. And then he goes, I'll box you. So Masvidal said he wants to box him, Askren.
Yeah, because that would turn out far differently than the Jake Paul fight, like a boxing match. Like,
I
don't understand. You know, they were going to do Fedor versus Lesnar back in the day, but Fedor won the one fight contract. The UFC would not do it. I'm like, I don't see the downside. Like, I don't understand the downside. Like, if he beats Lesnar, so what? You know what I mean? Lesnar might get beat any fight. You know, like, it's not like he's walking away with your belt. Like, I just don't. Man, I don't know. The greed is beyond me. And I don't think Dana's the greedy one. I think it's the – yeah, I thought the Fertitta brothers were greedy, buddy. I'll tell you what, the WME.
Oh,
yeah. You hear the WME told Dana he was going to scale back his office? He had planned his office in the new performance. And they told him he was going to have to scale it back. And he was like, are you out of your mind? I'm not scaling back.
Oh, no. And they probably told him that he should, like, step down after he's – the whole slap thing. And Dana was like, no. You know, like, I'm sure that they're giving all kinds of stuff. Now, another fight that's in the making right now, Donald Cerrone and Andrew Tate have some kind of beef. I'll show you Cerrone's reaction.
Andrew Tate, you got everyone calling and blowing my phone up while I'm out here on vacation. Talking about allegations, you want to try and fight me? If I come up to you, it's not a good idea to save your face, bro. Please, okay? Back in the day when me and Joe Schilling always used to watch videos if he wanted to fight you and you ran like a little girl your entire career, bro. Are you kidding me? I'll knock the shit out of you. I'm a real fighter. You're a fake bullshit wannabe fighter made up a bunch of world championship belts that you bought off eBay. Are you kidding me? I love how you have all your followers thinking that you're something great. Now, you're a great speaker and a moneymaker and a social media fanatic. I'll give you that, sure, but can you fight? Nah, man, you a bum. Tell you what, though. Good thing my buddy Danny White owns a massive fighting organization, and they're doing a Zuckerberg versus Elon Musk fight. Tell you what, you want to get your social media clout involved? I'll fight you on that, some bitch. Or because you don't want to see me on the street, so you might as well just make a date, do it then. When you get your sex trafficking bullshit under wraps and you get out of jail or you get off house arrest or whatever the hell they got you on right now, let me know. We can set it up and figure it out. Until then, shut the fuck up. Keep my name out of your mouth and enjoy your cigars and trafficking women, brother.
Oh.
They can fight for the bald mother effer belt.
Oh, it's really Cerrone looks jacked. I guess he's on TRT. He's all about it. Man. I think that Cerrone destroys Andrew Tate, but I also think he actually gets up for that fight. I don't think he wanted to fight his last couple fights, Jim Miller and this and that. I think he would like, he'll actually try and he'll beat the shit. I don't think he's not going to want to lose Andrew Tate on television. There's no way. Yeah.
I don't think Andrew Tate, I think he's beyond needing money to fight. They're going to kill him pretty soon anyway. I'll tell you that. Like, he'll be dead before long. He'll hang himself in his cell or something. It's a, you don't, you know, it's funny. He gets popular and starts sending a message against the mainstream message. All of a sudden he's sex trafficking women from 20 years ago, you know, like it's a, yeah. My son told me that I reminded him of Andrew Tate. And I had never heard of Andrew Tate. It was right when he was coming out. I looked at some of the stuff. I was like, God, I hope I don't remind you of that dude, because I just saw the offensive side. But then when you hear him, actually, what his message is awesome, I think, man, that men should be men and should act like men and quit being pussy. They went to shut him up pretty quick. So,
yeah, but as far as...
Yeah, fighting, they tried to put the boots to him. But no.
As far as fighting, though, I watched a lot of his fights. Seems like his chin is straight up in the air. And
yeah, he's not that great a kickboxer, man, at all. Like, at all. I've watched him. It's
but
you realize Don would be dead if Don were more famous. Like, if Don got blew up and got way, way more famous, like with the stuff he says, they would kill him too. He would hang himself in his jail cell for who knows what. So,
Don, did you
my paper pajamas here?
Yeah,
no, not yet.
They're not even letting people say it anymore. It's one thing to do it, but they're not even letting you say it anymore, man. So,
Well, listen, so Don, by the way, I saw you had who's the wrestler you had last week on your thing? You had a pretty good wrestler, old school.
Oh, Ken Patera.
Yeah, that he was like Mr. Olympian, right?
Yeah, that's old school, man.
No, he's the first man to put 500 pounds over his head, you know?
Oh, yeah, but was he the world's strongest
power clean?
Wow. That's
Well, I don't know if he was. He did several competitions. Yeah,
got it. That's pretty awesome.
He was great. He was tag team partners with the guy that broke me, Brad Reagan. You know, Brad was on the Olympic team of 76, and like the Olympic. You know,
and there's a video going around now of you saying you could beat up both the Paul brothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, somebody probably sent it to me.
Okay, fuck. Well, I mean, so what's the problem with that?
No, nothing. I'm just telling you that everyone keeps sending me these videos of like Don saying shit. I think it's great. I'm honored. So what do you got this weekend, Sean? Anything this weekend?
No, man, just physical therapy and doctor appointments and boring stuff. And I actually am working, like I said, I'm going to do a podcast. Not that I don't love doing this with you guys also every week, but everybody's been begging for it. So I'm going to do at least one podcast where I just trash Brendan Schaub the whole time, because that's what they're all begging for. So I'm going to do that one. There might be a Bruce Buffer joke here or there and there, my son's wanting to do stand-up. I told you, he's begging me to take him to one of your shows. And he wants to meet Don Fry at the same time. So I'm trying to work all that in on the same trip, if we can make it somehow, when you guys are both going to be in Vegas or something. But him and I were writing jokes yesterday. He was like telling me ideas he had. And he said he thought there was a joke there for like, you know, these guys that talk to kids for like, you know, a couple weeks and then confront them. Like they act like they're a kid talking to a pedophile, and then they show up and film the guy like, oh, you thought you were talking to a 13-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And then he said he saw one where the guy hadn't talked to him for 6 months. And my son was like, 6 months? You pretended to be a 13-year-old girl for 6 months? And he said he knew there was a punchline there, but he couldn't think of one. And so The one we came up with, it's still a working punchline, but it's going to be something along the line of the guy shows up and it's a real big, muscular black guy. And so my son, the joke, the punchline basically is that my son got molested by the guy that came anyway, even though he was an adult, you know what I mean, or whatever. Like he confronted the guy as an adult, and it turns out how you thought it would. He molested me, you know, or whatever. Like that's the joke, you know, because even though he's an adult. But I don't know. There's a good joke there somewhere.
There is a joke in there. I agree.
Yeah, he keeps begging me to go out.
And he had the mind of a 9-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants me to bring him, and he wants to kind of learn how the in and outs of the how it works, like the comedy thing. Because when I told him he'd go on cruises and stuff and get paid to do it, he's like, that would be my dream life, to travel and just tell jokes at night. And he's like, I said, he's the one I sent you the impressions. He does unbelievable impressions, man.
Unbelievable. He does unbelievable. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, he's been that way since he was a little kid. He used to impersonate his mom at 3 years old. She didn't think it was funny, so he wouldn't do it when she was around. But I know he's got an impersonation of me. He will not do it. My nephews swear it's the best impression you've ever heard in your life. He won't do it. He will not do it in front of me. And I'm like, dude, come on, just one time, but he won't do it. But yeah, he does. He's got one of you that they say is phenomenal too. Like he's got an Adam Hunter impression. But yeah, we're going to do up something by the end of this year, man. Are you going to do comedy out like New Year's time? Don't you normally go to Vegas during that time for the UFC around New Year's or something?
Yeah, I used to go to Vegas, but shit pops up all the time. Like, I just got booked like in Arkansas for January, and then I'm in Arizona, and then I'm back in Texas in September.
You know, when are you going to be in Arizona? When are you going to be in Arizona?
I think in November. November.
Are you anywhere in near down in Arizona when you do that? Because maybe that would be the best time.
The last time, that was the greatest trip ever.
Yeah, come on now.
Except when he made me hold all the guns. And I was like,
yeah, terrified him. He peed all over him like a cat spraying. You know?
That's true. This is true. By the way,
if you're doing that in November, I'll bring my son out. We'll come out and do the whole thing. And if you got to do it, like, I'll make it out there. So,
yeah. By the way, Chael is back working for the UFC this week, which is great. I want to hear one of my funniest Chael Sonnen stories. So, this is like, I don't know, 12 years ago. It was right before he was supposed to fight Vanderlei Silva, 10 years ago. And I'm in Calgary doing like this like comedy cave in Calgary, right? And I get a phone call from Chael. It must be like Sunday night, like 11 o'clock at night. He's like, hey, man, Adam. And we're friends, but we're not like friends. We're friends. We're friendly. We're friends. He's like, hey, man, so you know how I got busted for TRT and it came out last week? And I go, yeah, yeah. He goes, well, I went all in. He goes, and tomorrow it's coming out in the press that I did like 10 things. He goes, what do I do? And I'm like, first of all, what number am I on the list of people to call? Like you're calling a comedian? He goes, well, I just figured you'd make me feel better. I go, all right, well, say, listen, tell them that you know there's a steroid problem in the UFC. And in order to catch a criminal, sometimes you must become one. So right. You did steroids to find out what these people were doing. And that was your way of to rid all the steroids in the UFC. Right. He started crying laughing. He didn't say that. I was hoping he would. That would have been like, but he didn't actually say that to the press, but I was hoping he would.
He stole several of my lines. I told him one time that he should thank himself for all his hard work and dedication, because without him, none of this would be possible. And then he said that after a fight, and then he didn't give me credit for it. And I said, dude, at least on Twitter, give me a shout out or something. So then on the next Fox show he was on, he goes, he was talking about Stefan Struve fighting Mark Hunt. He goes, you're talking about a guy who beat McCorkle and a guy who lost to him. I don't know who to feel more sorry for in this fight, you know, or whatever like that. He said, you got your mention there, you big dummy. You happy? Like my son called me right away. Are you watching Channel 5? We're just talking about you. I was like, I didn't see it, man. And so he rewound it on TiVo or whatever it is and sent
he's
it to
one
me.
Of the coolest people. Somewhere. Like, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Like when
dude, his, I know you got to go, but his. Have you seen his thing where it's in black and white? And he talks about growing up and what it was like growing up. And
yeah.
He said, like, we had a maid, but she only came 3 days a week. Who do you think did the laundry? Dude, that is the funniest, to me, one of the funniest monologues I've ever heard in my life. And people think he's serious. Like, they think he's, like, dead. So it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, that dude he's funny, man.
He's one of the funniest. Dude, when King Mo had staph infection, he paid for the whole surgery. Like, he took
really?
Yeah. He's just like one of these guys. Like he's just the best. So Don, what do you got coming up?
Nothing, man. Nothing. I'm just hanging out with my bulldogs. You know, I got I got another infection right now. Doctor just called me yesterday or 2 days ago, told me that. So I'm all excited about that, you know. So just chilling, baby, just chilling.
Nice.
Well, I got no. You know what? I do this shit coming up. I'm a liar. I'm a liar. I'll be in Boston. Well, right now I'm scheduled to be in Boston for that fight for the UFC and do another tea and whiskey there. So unless they get pissed off and fire me between now and then, you know. So
I don't think they will. Knock on wood. Well, listen, you guys are great. I love you guys. Have a great weekend. Thank you for everything.
See you guys.
Take care, man.